Welcome to Animal Voices. I'm Joanne Chang here in the studio with my co-host Allison Cole and our technician John Pranger. Our other co-host Krista Truman will be unable to join us until next week since she's a vegan baker and is extremely busy these days. Today we'll be checking in with Ginger Sedlarova, a vegan blogger for the Vancouver Province newspaper. Her blog, Ginger Snaps, can be found on theprovince.com/opinion/blogs. Also joining us will be Melanie Joy, the author of Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows. The book is due out on January 1st, 2010. Please call your favorite bookstore to pre-order a copy today. And we'll also be giving away our advanced copy to a lucky winner on the show today. Hey, Allison.
Hey, Joanne. How are you?
Did you do anything interesting this week?
Well, I've been pretty busy this week, but the only interesting thing I really did was I had a huge shopping trip a couple nights ago. Ooh. For my my vegan baking marathon for Christmas time. That's coming up soon. I'm kind of behind on that, but at least I bought the ingredients. It cost me $120.
My goodness.
I've never put a price on it before, but because I do this every year. I've been doing it for many years, and it's, you know, I love to bake. I don't really have time to bake during the year, so I kind of like make it a priority, number one priority in December.
You save it all to the end of the year.
Yeah, really. I make like 10 different kinds of cookies, and it's a way too to do, you know, it's to share goodwill, and I'm sure I'll be bringing you and Krista some cookies next week when they're all done.
I'll be expecting them.
and it's a really great way to do some vegan outreach. So
yeah.
I always, you know, I bring these to work, and I work at a bunch of different places, and I always let people know, you know, they're dairy free and egg free, and and they're delicious, and and people love my cookies. So I've got like lots and lots of different kinds. I'm making walnut pie truffles, I'm calling them, because they're supposed to be pecan, but pecans are really expensive. The walnuts themselves cost me $40 for all my cookies, okay, or $38, I think. Gingerbread, Italian horns with, you make them with like a soy vanilla ice cream. And you roll up these little, like, they're like roll up these horns, and you put a, what do I put in them? Like a cherry pie filling. They melt in your mouth. Cherry cheese pinwheels made with tofutti cream cheese. And they're like these little pinwheels with a little cream cheese and cherry maraschino mixture blobs in the middle. With little sprinkles of almonds on top. Spritz, chocolate chip, raspberry cookies, and you got me that white chocolate last week from Carmivore. I'm going to be making chips out of that. Baklava, I use maple syrup instead of honey, and that's the only, you know, it's just the honey that makes it not vegan. The maple syrup is a fine substitute. You don't need to, I mean, it tastes great. And sugar cookie cutouts and maple sandballs. There's one other type, and I can't remember what they are right now, but anyways. Gonna be good stuff, but I
that
have
sounds great. I can't wait.
Yeah, I gotta start my baking tomorrow though. I'm kind of behind, so from tomorrow my goal is to be done by next Tuesday, so it's gonna be a lot of baking.
I guess we won't be seeing Allison until next Tuesday.
Plus working too, of course, but so that's what I did this week. And
cool, that sounds
exciting. You'll know what I'll be doing all next next week, a lot of next week.
Well, and I'll be waiting to eat the outcome of that hard work. So I was at the Sarah Kramer fundraiser for Hearts on Noses.
Yeah.
Too bad you missed it.
I know. Had to work. But I saw the pictures, and I saw Sarah's report on Facebook.
Yeah.
And it looked like a lot of fun, and Biff Naked was there.
Yes. I caught a glimpse of her.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit shy to go up to her, but she was leaving. So it was... I never got a chance to talk to her, but I really, really wanted to interview her. So
that would have been a great idea. She's
Biff
a vegan,
Naked?
Right?
Yes, she is. If you're listening, Biff Naked, please, we want you on the show.
Yeah, it'd be great. Be on the Animal Voices show.
She's tiny. She's about my height. I'm not very tall. I'm not even 5 foot tall. So Sarah Kramer. True tiny women with big personalities.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So while at Carmivore, I bought the incredible new vegan Daya cheese. The stuff is just out of this world. It's made right here in North Vancouver, and it's been taking North America by storm. It's stringy and melts. It tastes and look like cheese, minus all the cruelty.
It's delicious.
Yeah?
It's delicious. I've had it now. Well, I bought some in Seattle last month, and as I was saying earlier before the show, I've made nachos like three times, like three big plates, and it goes a long way.
Oh, yeah.
And that cheese you gave me today is going to last a long time.
And it stretches on the pizza, like real pizza, like real cheese.
It's lovely. It's wonderful. It certainly is the best vegan cheese ever made.
And for the soy naysayers, it's actually not made with soy. It's made with tapioca.
Yeah. Cassava root is tapioca, right? That's what it says on the package. It's good stuff. And, it's not sold officially retail yet. You can get it from Karmavore because they buy it bulk and they, do they only sell it in the 5 pound bags?
In the 5 pound bags.
Which are huge bags, but you can freeze it.
Yeah.
It freezes perfectly well. I was reading in an interview with the Daya people that it's going to be sold retail in stores starting next March. March 2010.
Oh, that's great.
Yep,
I think they're already sold in retail in the States.
Like where I bought it, it's the same. They buy it wholesale. So it's only like the vegan shops that sell it. Quite a few restaurants.
Whole Foods
starting.
Was selling them like in LA or something?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I think it's the same. Like they buy it bulk and then they package it. So they can buy it, but it's not like sold officially. Like the distribution isn't so large that they're actually officially selling it. So
pretty amazing. It's made right here in North Vancouver. So
I know.
Pretty awesome.
It's wonderful.
We have some really great stuff that's coming out of Vancouver, like the Gardein protein. Have you had that?
Oh yeah, and Eve started here too, and lots of good stuff.
So, well, of course, as we were saying, I got to meet Sarah Kramer in person, and she is just such a lovely, lovely
lady. We had her on the show last week.
Yeah, and I mean, I thought, you know, she's like this big celebrity, but she was just so, so nice, and I plan to go visit her in Victoria, because I want to go get a tattoo at her husband's tattoo shop.
Yeah, Tattoo Zoo.
Yeah, Tattoo Zoo. So, well, speaking of Sarah Kramer, we have some prizes that we were going to give away
last week. Okay, so we were going to do a draw last week, everyone had a chance this last week to enter a draw. All you had to do was to post a discussion item on whenever discussion topics on Facebook. The discussion topic was, what are some things that you want to hear on the Animal Voices show? We did get some good suggestions. Let's see here. We're going to do the draw.
Do we need the drum roll?
Yeah, sure. But don't... Yeah, that's good. That's good. Okay, so the winner is... Claire Louise.
Woo-hoo!
So Claire Louise, if you're listening, you're going to be winning a 2010 Go Vegan calendar, which is a Sarah Kramer pinup calendar, and the 10th anniversary edition of the How It All Began cookbook, but also by Sarah Kramer, which is a great book. We will be in contact with you via Facebook on how you can pick that up.
Yeah, and for listeners who have not joined our Facebook yet, it's Animal Voices Vancouver. Make sure it's the Vancouver one, because there's another Animal Voices from Toronto. So Animal Voices Vancouver on Facebook or Animal Voices YVR on Twitter. Well, I think it's over to you, Allison. What do you have for community events this week?
Oh, you weren't going to do your news?
I thought my I have it backwards. My news is after.
Okay, I can do events. Okay, so let's see here. So we have the second annual vegan food drive, which is being run by Liberation BC, and it has started already. It's running through to December the 26th. Liberation BC is having a vegan food drive again this year, and all the food will be donated to the Greater Vancouver Food Bank to help people in need. Donations of non-perishable food items can be dropped off at Karmavore Vegan Shop in New Westminster or at Gorilla Food, which is located at 436 Richard Street. You can also contact Glenn at Glenn with two N's at liberationbc.org to arrange to have your donation picked up. So that food drive runs from now until December the 26th.
Make sure it's vegan.
Yeah, vegan food products, please. December the 12th, we'll be having, or not we, but there will be a vegan dim sum lunch at the Bokong restaurant. That's on December the 12th. For those who don't know, Bokong is probably the most popular Chinese vegetarian restaurant in Vancouver, and they have a lot of good food there, many, many food items. So this is a I guess it's a meetup being run by the Veg Meetup group. The dim sum menu that they have arranged are spinach dumplings, steamed siu mai, hope I said that right, rice sheet roll, fried bean curd roll, skin roll, pan-fried turnip cake, pan-fried pot sticker, deep-fried taro dumpling, Shanghai-style dumplings, pan-fried veggie buns, and Chinese tea. All this for only $11 per person. That's tip and tax included. To register, go to meetup.com and search for the Veg Meetup Vancouver group.
When is this again?
You want to go? It's December. It's tomorrow.
Oh,
so
okay.
Get on there now.
Yeah.
There's already, as of yesterday, there were already 45 people registered. So,
oh, my goodness. It's a good price.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done dim sum. I think I've done it. Yeah, I've done it at Bo Kong before. So they definitely give you a lot of good food there. Okay, so what else do I want to talk about here? We've got Sunday, December 13th. That's this Sunday at 8 o'clock p.m. on the CBC News Network. There's a documentary that's all about the world of jellyfish on television.
Ooh.
It's called Jellyfish Invasion. If you wanted to know anything about jellyfish, I'm sure it'll all be told on this documentary. Also, another documentary, Tuesday, December 15th at 1 o'clock p.m. on CBC TV. Canine Confidential. Do you know that as many as 1 million dogs in the U.S. are named as the primary beneficiaries in their owner's will? Or that 33% of dog owners admit to talking to their pooches on the phone? Dogs have always been men's best friend, but how far does that love go? Canine Confidential explores the fascinating and mystifying relationship we have had with dogs for thousands of years. From the backyard to the bedroom, we have elevated dogs to full-fledged members of our family. And with that new rule comes opportunities and dilemmas. I'm just reading that from the website. It's called Canine Confidential. I'm going to set my VCR for that. On Tuesday, December 15th. I talked about this last week, the RADA dine-out hosted by EarthSafe Canada, saying you have to get your reservations in by December 10th, but it looks like they've extended the deadline to December 14th. That's what it says on the website. Anyways, good. I'm going to. It's going to be really good. For those who don't know, RADA Yoga and Eatery is a very fine vegan restaurant, one of our very few vegan restaurants in Vancouver, and they'll be hosting a wonderful holiday-themed dine-out, which is a set menu dinner. It's run by EarthSafe Canada, and it's $25 for EarthSafe members, or if you're not a member, $28, but everyone is welcome. The plated feast includes a local Waldorf salad, roasted squash, coconut curry, hazelnuts with a creamy hazelnut dressing, lentil terrine with winter root vegetable mash, stuffing, cranberry chutney, seasonal vegetables, and miso gravy. For dessert, there will be a wheat-free, gluten-free pumpkin pie sweetened with maple syrup and served with whipped cashew cream. All of this is local, organic, and vegan. If you want to go, you have to make your reservation by December the 14th at 5 p.m. Go to meetup.com, search for Vancouver Meatless Meetup, and from there you'll see this event posted. The last thing I wanted to talk about, just put another plug for this event this week, just because it is filling up very quickly, and I announced last week that spaces were going really fast. It's the Animal Advocacy Camp, which is being organized by several individuals who are interested in getting together like-minded individuals. I'm helping to organize. Getting together like-minded individuals who are into animal advocacy who can get together during this day of self-propelled workshops to network and to learn how to brainstorm, just working together, bringing all these people from different areas of animal advocacy. Doesn't matter what animal you're advocating for, whether it's dogs or cats or pigs or chickens.
Or how experienced you are, because everybody has good ideas.
Or even if you haven't really done it before and you're interested in doing work for the animals, this is the event to go to. It's going to be Saturday, January the 23rd, a full-day event from 10 a.m. to 5 o'clock p.m. at the Vancouver Public Library down on Georgia Street downtown.
There's already 67 people registered.
67. Yes. Okay, so I think that means there's officially 28 spots left then.
Yeah.
So get in your registration now. And this has just been in the last week and a bit that 67 have registered. So it is filling up super quick, so quick that we had to open up more spaces this week and get a bit bigger room. So if you want to register, it's free and you get food included. There's going to be lunch and snacks and coffee and that. So it's a really great deal. To register, go to animaladvocacycamp.ca and you'll see a link there on the main page to register. So I'll be there. I'm sure Joanne will be there and it'll be a great event. If you have an animal or vegetarian related event coming up that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@ animalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook group, Animal Voices Vancouver. Over to you, Joanne.
Okay, on to the news. If you care about world hunger, don't give a cow this holiday season, according to an op-ed in the Georgia Strait by local activist Leslie Fox. Since it takes up to 16 pounds of grain to produce 1 pound of meat, the hungry people would better be served eating the grain themselves rather than having to care for the animals. Fox urges you to consider supporting a world hunger charity that do not use animals, such as Tree for Life, Trees for Life, Food for Life, and the Women's Bean Project. According to the DairyPlanet.com, over the past 25 years, fluid milk consumption has fallen by more than 18%, and it's expected to drop another 12% by 2020. Canadians are buying nearly 30% less butter than they did 25 years ago, and 25% less ice cream. Cheddar cheese consumption. I know. Isn't that great? We're doing some good work here. It's all the yummy vegan cheese and alternatives. Cheddar cheese consumption has moved up by less than 2% since 1980. So I think this explains the recent surge in aggressive dairy ads, like the must drink more milk ad campaign by the BC dairy industry. Have you seen those?
Well, yes. And there's all the... I don't understand why people are consuming less dairy when there's so much advertising for it.
I don't know. It's a strange, because the animal advocates are doing their job.
Oh, I don't know. Or like you said, maybe because there's all of these dairy-free
alternatives.
Yeah. So people who are lactose intolerant, and a lot of people are, can go to these. Who knows? Can go to these alternatives.
Exactly. And I think that's why there's been a lot of negative sort of rumors spread about soy and that sort of thing. And when, you know, like the estrogen with soy, when that really is is really an inconclusive thing. Whereas, you know, all milk, no matter how natural it is, has 59 naturally occurring growth hormones. And one of those hormones has been proven to cause prostate
and breast
cancer.
It makes sense because with the naturally occurring hormones, that's what milk is for. It's to raise baby cows.
Yeah.
It's to make them grow.
90 pound to 450 pounds.
But the thing is even baby calves in the wild, so to speak, don't drink milk their whole lives like we humans do.
Right. Okay, well, we don't have time to finish our news. Our next caller is on the line. Joining us now is blogger Ginger Sedlarova from the province. Her blog is Ginger Snaps, One Girl's Journey to Save the Earth Without Turning into a Hippie. The blog can be found online at theprovince.com/opinion/blogs. I've been the reader of this blog for a long time, and I'm always fascinated by what the snappy Ginger has to say, whether it's about animals, food, clothing, or a summer road trip. Hi, Ginger.
Hi, Ginger.
Hi. Can you guys hear me?
Yes. Nice to meet you on the radio.
Nice to meet you, too. And
I have read your blog, too.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
It's a lot of fun. So what's going on in the world of Ginger Snaps?
Ginger Snaps is an ever-evolving world of my making, I like to think of it, where I can pretty much do and say as I like, and I'm just lucky to have a platform for it that is pretty attached to a major media outlet, and that they tolerate me.
Yeah, so one of my questions I wanted to ask you is, you know, the province seems like a rather conservative newspaper. How did you end up with a blog devoted to vegetarianism?
Well, they put out a call when we first started being more web-friendly here at the paper for anyone who wanted to write a blog, and I thought, geez, I have not written in a long time. That would be fun. I have a journalism background, but I've moved to graphic design, and I thought, geez, I'd really like to start writing. So I threw it out there thinking, they won't go for this, and they went, yeah, sure, what the heck.
Cool.
And I still think, though, that they were hoping I'd just quietly go away and no one would actually read it, but unfortunately, there's a lot of us out there.
Well, I'm glad you snatched up that opportunity, because it certainly is well-read in the vegan community, and anybody trying to transfer to a vegan diet.
I have a lot of meat-eating readers as well who are making the choice to eat less animal products, which has been really, really a big surprise to me. So
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
So have you been successful in your request to save the world without turning into a hippie?
Not quite yet. No, I just want to say I don't hate hippies. Some of my best friends are hippies. I don't have a thing for patchouli and stuff like that, right?
But I can't tolerate patchouli either.
So I'm afraid I have been successful in not turning into a hippie, but not yet saving the world. I'm working on it, though.
That's great.
One step at a time, just
exactly.
like the rest of us.
One person, an animal at, at a time, I can say, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to ask you, why did you start this blog? Other than that, there was an opportunity, but was it, you know, other than you wanting to write, is there something that happened in your life, or you were thinking about these issues more?
I you know, it's interesting because the issues happened after the blog began, which I was thinking about a couple of days ago, because I missed writing. And this is something that was dear to my heart, but the blog has changed my life in so many ways. So, like, for example, I work a lot of volunteer work. I'm a lot more careful about where I shop, what I eat, et cetera, et cetera. I've learned if anyone's gotten anything out of my blog, it's me.
That's great. Now, what... since you started this journey, what is the most shocking thing you've learned about animal agriculture that you wish everyone would know?
That's an easy one, actually, now that I think of it. How all-pervasive animal products are in our everyday lives. As I started to research, I couldn't believe that the things I've been putting on my face for years had been tested on or had animal fats.
Yeah, they're all the byproducts that the rendering companies need to get rid of.
Exactly. So I've cleaned out my cupboards. I've cleaned out my closets. I think that's what really shocked me, though, is how it just sneaks in everywhere. You know, anchovies and Worcestershire sauce, chewing gum, things like that.
I recently heard there's pork in Crest toothpaste or something like that.
I've heard there's animal byproducts in there. I personally only use, this is one of the main things I change.
Yeah, the cruelty-free ones.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I tend to trust those if they have the bunny symbol. I've learned to love the bunny symbol.
Yes.
You need to get more of that bunny symbol around.
That's right.
Yeah, we're working on it.
Now, what's the most shocking thing you learned about yourself?
That I actually... Well, I always thought I was a pretty busy person, and a fairly giving person, but I think, as I mentioned before, that I actually have so much more to give and to do. The blog actually, how to put this, it sounds funny because the blog's about animals and, you know, treating them better, but it actually has turned me more on to, I found more of a passion for people through my love for animals, so I'm doing a huge amount of homeless volunteer work and stuff, so I've discovered a whole new energy for what's going on out there.
Right, I know, people always say, you know, like, vegans, why don't you care about people? It's
not true.
Who says we don't?
Compassion is not limited. Like, once you start being compassionate, like, we become environmentalists, human rights activists, everything.
Exactly. It's not all about the, it's all about living beings, is what I say.
Right. It's about being aware, I think.
Doing the least harm.
Yes. All of the above. How about?
Yeah. So what are some of the things we can expect to read about on Ginger Snaps in the new year?
Oh, boy. I'm having a bit of fun trying to put together, and this won't start happening till January, some celebrity interviews with celebrity vegans and vegetarians.
Do tell.
Well, George LaRocque, my new favorite hockey player behind Roberto Luongo. And Biff Naked.
Cool.
And Sarah Kramer,
who is in town. Biff's contact info.
Yeah, we'll talk.
We want to have her on the show.
And then, you know, I'm just going to go out there and just start having fun. If I don't get them, like Pamela Anderson, I'm going to blog about how hard it is to get to them, right?
Yeah.
And hopefully shame them into... No, I'm joking.
That would be great if you can get Pamela Anderson. She's huge.
Everyone wants her. So that's one of the many things. And another topic that I'm going to address is I am a vegetarian. I am not a vegan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty much vegan, but I think until you're 100%, you can't call yourself one. So I think it's time. It's time to start...
to start calling yourself the big V.
I think it's time to do it, is what I'm saying.
I know where you're coming from. For the longest time, I felt the same way, like, oh, I'm like 95% vegan, so I can't really call myself that yet, but... But in reality, it is pretty impossible to be 100%. Mm-hmm. I think if you're 98% or above, and that's really very subjective,
I think being vegan is just trying the best you can.
And like I say, doing the least harm, right?
Yes.
Doing the least harm.
It's not being a perfect human being, because none of us will ever attain that.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, I always say you can't be 100% vegan unless you live out on a mountain somewhere by yourself, right? It's not really...
Don't get it. Even then.
But it doesn't mean you shouldn't do the least harm and do what you can do, right?
And call yourself a vegan. Yeah, we embrace you in the community.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it because I think it's going to be an extra step, and it's something I really have wanted to do for a long time.
That's great.
So, well, thank you.
That's awesome. Now, since it's the end of the year, we're going to do a round of questions.
Okay.
I stole this from Allison last week about your favorite cruelty-free things in 2009.
Oh, boy.
That's a great idea.
Favorite mock meat?
Leftover tofurkey in sandwiches the day after a holiday.
Oh, yum.
Oh, boy, they're good with, you know, with organic cranberry sauce and tofunaise,
mm-hmm.
or veginaise, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure which I like better. But, yeah, leftover tofurkey sandwiches, that's my favorite mock meat.
Favorite sweets?
Krispy Kat. You know the candy bars, guys?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
You can get them at London Drugs.
I know. That's where I first found them.
Yeah. They were on sale, too, when I found them the first time. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. They're my favorite. Mm-hmm. I also really like the Go Max Go vegan ones, but you can't get them at London Drugs yet.
Mm-hmm. Krispy Kat. So they've got, like, three different kinds, I think.
I think they have four now, actually. They have a new one.
So for those who don't know, they're vegan chocolate bars with different flavors. One's coconut flavor. I can't quite remember.
That's my favorite.
Yeah. Oh, yum.
But, yeah, you can get them at Choices, Capers, London Drugs, and Carmivore.
Wow.
I happen to know every place you can get them, so there's something always close by.
Your favorite travel destination?
Prague. I used to live there for 10 years, I love going home. So.
Huh. Interesting. I wasn't expecting that.
I know. Most people. Great vegetarian food there. They have really gone uphill. I finally got to try goulash when I was living there because a place out of a town called Brno put out a whole bunch of Czech specialties in vegetarian varieties. It was heaven.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Favorite cosmetics? Cruelty-free, of course.
I need you ask. Physician's formula because I know I never have to check the labels.
Okay. Well, that's great.
And they're organic.
Favorite book?
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you a lie and then the truth.
Okay.
The lie is what I'm reading right now, again, Living Amongst Meat Eaters by Carol J. Adams.
Oh, yes.
It helps me to cope in the world that we live in.
Good book.
And I need it pre-Christmas before I go for that.
Right.
Sit around that turkey.
Yeah, she tells you what to do in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank God for that woman. Mm-hmm. Okay, but I can never stop reading Gone with the Wind. Shh.
Oh. That's an interesting one.
That's
a weird one, I know.
Well, we're running out of time, so do you have some parting words for our audience?
Well, why not my favorite phrase, which is so cheesy, but I don't care. Keep on rocking in the meat-free world.
Woo-hoo! Awesome. Woo-hoo. Thanks for coming on the show, Ginger.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We've been speaking to vegan blogger Ginger Sedlarova. Her blog, Ginger Snaps, can be found online at province.com/opinion/blogs. You're listening to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. Shall we take a short musical break before our guest comes on the show?
We shall.
I'm just a-walking my dog, singing my song. It's just me and my dog, catching some sun. We can't go wrong. My love was lonely and blue. Yeah, I was sad as a sailor. I was an angry one too. Then there was you appeared when I was entangled with youth and fear. And nerves jingle, jangled, vermouth and beer were getting me mangled up. But then I looked in your eyes and I was no more a failure. You looked so wacky and wise. And I said, Lord, I'm happy to have just a walk in my dog, singing my song, strolling along. With just me and my dog, catching some sun. We can't go wrong. And I don't care about your hate and your doubt. And I don't care what the politicians spout. If you need a companion, why just go out by the pound and find yourself a hound? Cause that's what it's all about. My love was tragic and sad. I was the archetypal loser. I was a pageant gone bad. Then there was you on time and wagging your tail in the cutest mime. And you was in jail. I said, woof, be mine. life and you gave away a lament. I was no longer alone, and I was no more a boozer. We'll make the happiest home. And I said, Lord, I'm happy because I'm just walking my dog.
You were just listening to the dog song from singer, songwriter, pianist, vegan animal activist Nellie Mackay, which I think is an appropriate intro to our next guest, Melanie Joy, who is here to talk about her new book, Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows. Melanie Joy is a social psychologist, a professor of psychology at the University of Massachusetts in Boston. She holds a PhD in social psychology from Saybrook Graduate College and a master's degree in teaching and curriculum from the Harvard Graduate School of Education. She has written numerous articles on psychology, animal rights, and social justice, and is the author of the book Strategic Action for Animals. Listeners of today's show will have a chance to win a copy of Melanie's new book, Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows, if you answer this question correctly. And the question is, if we call an herbivore vegetarian, what do we call an omnivore? Send your answer to radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Melanie Joy, welcome to Animal Voices.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, your book, it was very interesting. Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows is groundbreaking in a sense that it deals with a subject that has never been contained and identified in such a direct way. Yet, it is something that all of us have learned to cope with in our everyday lives, almost like a disorder that has never had a name or definition until now. It is a concept you call carnism, and I'm wondering if you can tell us what that is.
Yep, certainly. Well, thank you. Carnism is essentially the opposing belief system or ideology to veganism. It's the invisible belief system that conditions people to eat some animals but not others. So carnism is why people don't think of the living animal when, for example, they're eating a hamburger, chicken, or bacon, but they typically envision the animal if they're presented with something like golden retriever or squirrel. Carnism is why people across cultures tend to feel disgusted at the idea of eating all but a tiny handful out of tens of thousands of animal species, and why they never even question the fact that they eat some animals, but not others. So when it comes to meat eating, we tend to only see veganism or vegetarianism as a choice. Mm-hmm. We tend to assume that it's only vegetarians or vegans that are bringing their ideology to the dinner table. And we don't see meat eating as we do vegetarianism, as a choice based on a set of assumptions about animals, our world, and ourselves. Instead, we typically see it as a given, as the natural thing to do, as just the way things are. But when meat eating isn't a necessity for survival, it's a choice, and choices always stem from beliefs. So people eat animals without thinking about what they're doing and why, because the belief system that underlies the behavior is invisible. And that's the belief system that I call carnism. And naming carnism allows us to view meat eating in a radically different light. And it also helps to kind of destigmatize vegans, as it shows that we're not the only ones with a dietary philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Because now we can see that meat eaters, or which I call carnists, have a belief system too. So it's not that carnists are, you know, normal and vegans are different, but that both groups are acting according to their own ideology.
That's very interesting. And, you know, as vegans, we all know this. We can't really go through the day without paying attention to everything we do that contribute to animal suffering. And as a result of this constant awareness, a lot of vegans are also environmentalists and concerned about human welfare issues. Why do you think it is that while vegetarian and vegan lifestyle requires almost a constant moral evaluation of all the things that we do and eat, while a carnist lifestyle, or what we view as a normal lifestyle, seems so easy and requires almost no thought at all?
Well, I think there are two answers to that question. One is that not all carnists are alike, just as not all vegans are alike. Mm-hmm. I know plenty of conscientious carnists who are always considering their impact on the environment, their community, on human rights, but they haven't made the connection between their food choices and the impact on those who become their food. And I also know plenty of vegans who focus on animal welfare to the exclusion of other mm-hmm. social issues. But having said that, when it comes to carnism, as with any other dominant system, it's always easier to follow the path of least resistance
the whole system is set up to encourage this, to encourage conformity to the carnistic norm. So it only makes sense that being a carnist would be practically and in some ways psychologically easier than being a vegan when carnism is the dominant system.
It's interesting that you say it's psychologically easier when you speak in your book about the concept of carnistic schema and the carnistic matrix, a nonsensical psychological acrobatics that all carnists have to practice on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. You know, on the one hand, most people believe that they love animals and will be repulsed at the idea of eating a dog, yet they think nothing about eating beef.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it that we love dogs, eat pigs, and wear cows? And why is it that carnists have, you know, what is this psychological acrobatics that they do on a daily basis?
Mm-hmm. Well, when I said we love dogs and we eat pigs in my book, I was referring largely to North Americans. But mm-hmm. even though the animals we love and the animals we eat change from culture to culture,
right.
So even though the content or the what changes, the process or the how we relate to non-human animals stays the same. And that's how carnism operates. The system doesn't determine which animals are edible and which are inedible. It determines how we relate to each group of animals. Or more accurately, it determines whether we have these opposing categories at all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, across cultures, societies tend to have a select group of animals that they've deemed edible, and they find the idea of eating all other types of animals disgusting and offensive. And what carnism does is it gives people the tools to shut off their empathy toward the animals they've classified as edible. So carnism teaches us how to psychologically numb ourselves when it comes to eating meat so that we don't feel our natural empathy and therefore our normal response of disgust at the idea of eating a dead animal.
Mm-hmm. Now, vegetarians and vegans have often been accused by carnists as being too emotional or irrational, that we want to do is cuddle cute animals instead of behaving naturally like someone on the top of the food chain. Do you think that people who eat meat actually are more emotional and irrational than vegetarians and vegans?
Well, I don't think you can compare carnists and vegans when it comes to emotion or emotionality and rationality. I think people are individuals first. Mm-hmm. Many carnists have less in common with each other than they do with vegans, and vice versa in some ways. But the dominant carnistic culture, as have other cultures that depended on maintaining an exploitive status quo or an exploitive norm, stereotypes the people who challenge the system as too emotional and therefore irrational. This is a common backlash against any movement that threatens to destabilize the dominant system. So, for example, if we believe that vegans are irrational, then we don't have to take their message seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it, you know, feeling sadness, grief, horror, anger, fear, all of these are healthy and entirely appropriate responses to witnessing the intensive suffering of billions of sentient beings. Our world needs more of these feelings, not less of them. And it's also a myth that feelings and reason can't coexist. Our emotions are important sources of information, and they can and should inform our decisions along with our rational mind. And, you know, getting back to what you asked about the food chain, the so-called food chain is a myth. It's a justification used to maintain carnistic practices. I'm not saying there isn't a food chain at all, but carnism has constructed the way that we think of it simply to maintain the carnistic system. You know, a chain, by definition, doesn't have a top, and if it did, it would be inhabited by carnivores, not omnivores. And historically, members of dominant groups have placed themselves atop the so-called natural hierarchy of life as a way to justify their exploitive practices.
Interesting. Now, what would you say to someone who refuses a piece of vegetarian literature outside of a steakhouse and the justification for the rejection of that information is, what I eat is my choice. You have no right to limit my choice.
Well, first of all, it's probably not the best use of an activist's time to pass out literature outside of a steakhouse. That's the first thing I'd say. But one of the most important things for vegans to remember is that carnism is a system that's dependent on psychological defenses in order for it to continue. And when we're born into a carnistic culture, we grow up to embrace the system's logic as our own. The system's defenses become our defenses. This is what I refer to as internalized carnism. We see the world through the eyes of carnism. Now, the reason the system depends on these defenses in the first place is because most people do care about animals, and they can't stand to think that they've caused them to suffer. The average carnist feels guilty on some level about his or her consumption of animals, and carnistic defenses block that person's awareness of this guilt. So someone who's just dined on a steak is much less likely to be open to information about veganism than they might otherwise be. Vegans so often get caught up engaging with carnistic defenses rather than with the carnist that the conversation ends up getting derailed or leading to more strife. So, you know, when somebody says, what I eat is my free choice, this is clearly a carnistic defense. It's a ridiculous and irrational response. Of course what the carnist eats is their own choice. That's why the vegan's advocating for them in the first place. If the carnist didn't have a choice, there would be no point in handing them any literature on veganism. But what the carnist is really saying outside the steakhouse is, don't tell me that or I'll feel guilty for what I've just done.
Right. Melanie, are you familiar with the term decompartmentalization?
Compartmentalization.
Or compartmentalization, okay.
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit about that for us? I've read about it before, but I'm sure you're more of an expert. But this is, I'm seeing a bit of this, you know, along with what you've been saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I refer to in the book as dichotomization, and I think you're referring to the same thing. They're two different terms for the same thing. It's creating compartments in
right.
our mind, psychological compartments, where we can classify different groups and put those groups in different compartments in our minds and harbor very different feelings and attitudes toward them. And so this is what happens when, you know, this is why we can love our dogs, you know, pet our dogs while we eat our hamburgers and not even recognize the contradiction in this.
Mm-hmm. And I just don't, I don't think people are aware that this is what they're doing, right?
Well, they're not, and that's the whole point. The reason that carnism is so powerful in the first place is because it's invisible. Invisibility is the primary defense of the system. You know, if we don't see it, if we don't name it, we can't talk about it. If we can't talk about it, we can't challenge it or question it. And the things that go on, the psychological acrobatics, as you pointed out before, that carnists need to go through in order to eat their meat without feeling, you know, the emotions they might otherwise feel, like empathy and disgust, are unconscious. The system is set up to block our awareness and to block our empathy.
So how does a person get past this blockage, people being such as people who choose not to eat meat or anything that's they see is has cruelty been inflicted on them? I mean, I've talked to people who made this connection when they were 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how does one get past this blockage?
Well, part of it is, I think awareness is really key. The reason I wrote this book in the first place was to help people, help carnists, to recognize not simply why they shouldn't eat meat, but why they do eat meat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to make the invisible visible. But I think it's also important to realize that this blockage exists for a reason. Vegans, we often advocate to carnists and think if we could just, you know, once they just see the, quote, truth, you know, they'll make that shift.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the facts often don't sell the ideology. People can be aware of what happens to the animals that become meat and continue to eat them. This awareness often wears off. And so I think it's very important to recognize that in order for people to make the kind of shift of consciousness that you're talking about, and people do it at different times in their lives and in different ways, they need to feel safe enough to do that. They need to be ready in their own lives to do that, because we're not simply asking for people to change their behavior. We're asking for a profound shift of consciousness, a paradigm shift, a shift of identity. We're asking people to see themselves as strands in the web of life, you know, rather than standing atop the so-called hierarchical food chain or ladder of life. And we're asking for people to, you know, once you allow yourself to really witness, to really take in the reality of animal suffering on this planet, your life is never the same. you're never the same person as you were before.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
And you need to be ready to do that and ready for the consequences of what that means for your life and your quality of life.
Now, you describe carnism as a violent ideology. What are some of the dangers in our unwillingness to recognize carnism?
Well, the dangers to the animals and the planet are clear, and it's becoming, you know, more clear of the dangers to human health. But refusing to recognize carnism, it harms us on an emotional or some might say a spiritual level as well. Carnism requires the very qualities that are antithetical to psychological and spiritual well-being. You know, it requires, for instance, dishonesty rather than authenticity. It requires apathy rather than empathy, mm-hmm. and it requires ignorance rather than awareness. So as long as these carnistic traits are tolerated and even embraced by society, mm-hmm. I don't think we'll ever have the kind of humanitarian society that we claim to aspire to.
That's very interesting. Now, what are some examples of violent ideologies that we've learned to recognize in our society, and what similar traits do these violent ideologies have with carnism?
Well, any ideology that's organized around causing one group to suffer at the hands of another will employ similar mechanisms as carnism. I mean, racism is a good example. In its extreme form, it made possible the widespread practice of human slavery. And these ideologies are similar because they require humane people to support inhumane practices without fully realizing what they're doing. And they employ defenses such as denial. You know, we tell ourselves the victims don't really suffer. You know, for instance, Africans were believed to have higher thresholds of pain than whites, and so they could be treated accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
They employ avoidance. You know, again, when the ideology isn't named, it can't be questioned or challenged. Or, you know, I'm sure you've heard this, don't tell me that, you'll ruin my meal.
Right.
You know, and justification, to name a few. And the heart of all defenses is dissociation, which is not fully connecting psychologically and emotionally with the truth of your experience.
Now, when we know, we always hear all sorts of excuses like, well, and cows can be eaten because they're not as smart as dogs, or, you know, they don't feel pain as much. Do you think that's part of carnism? You know, like people actually do realize that these animals suffer and they just are in denial?
Yeah, well, carnism is, yes, in answer to your question, yes. The defenses of carnism, they overlap, and they work together. And when one defense fails, another defense steps in. So, like I said, invisibility is the primary defense of the system. You know, of the 10 billion land animals that are raised and killed every year in the United States for their flesh and other body parts, most people, even people living in the country, rarely see any of them, you know, a handful at most. And so, but invisibility inevitably fails at some point or falters at some point. We are exposed to the reality of meat production at some point in our lives, even if just briefly, and this is where other defenses like justification would step in. So if we find a justification for our behaviors, then we feel, we don't feel the moral discomfort we might otherwise feel.
Now, how do you think vegans and vegetarians can open up this conversation with carnists and openly discuss carnism? What would you suggest?
Well,
Give them your book.
Huh?
Give people your book. It's a hard topic to just bring up, you know?
It's a very difficult topic.
Christmas present.
Well, yes, I would suggest buying. This is the book that I wrote. It's the book that I've always wanted to be able to give to the carnists in my own life.
Mm-hmm.
It's the book I've wanted to be able to say, you know, here, if you read this, you'll better understand me, you'll better understand my choices, and you'll better understand yourself and your own choices. So I wrote this really with the intention of helping to empower vegans, of course, you know, to feel more grounded in their own choices and aware of their own choices. And to help vegans better advocate to carnists. I mean, if we don't understand the system we're working to transform, we're at a serious disadvantage. But I also wrote this book for carnists, hoping that they would be more open to learning about why they do eat meat and how they are also victims of the system of carnism. Carnism depends on a constituency of victims, you know, that don't recognize themselves as victims, so that people will keep participating in a system that is really not in their own best interest. You know, I really feel that, you know, as vegans, it's very difficult to talk about these issues. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to advocate without invoking carnistic responses. Mm-hmm. I always feel that, you know, that like to try to live by, you know, what Gandhi says, become the change that you wish to see in the world. I think when vegans become more aware of the psychology of carnism, they'll be a lot less likely to be frustrated and angry and reactive when they're communicating with the carnists they encounter.
It seems like this is an ideology you've had on your mind for quite some time, and I imagine it would, you know, it takes quite a bit of research to write a whole book about the subject, and I applaud you for it. I haven't seen a book. I mean, I've read a lot of animal rights books, a lot of them, and I haven't seen a book like this come out before. And I know you have your first book, Strategic Action for Animals, that came out some time ago. How did you go from writing that book to writing this book? Is it just something, as you said, you've just been wanting to get out on paper for a long time?
This book was originally a chapter in Strategic Action.
Okay.
That felt like it deserved to be its own book. It's based on my doctoral dissertation, in which I interviewed carnists and meat cutters and butchers about their experience, and also vegans and vegetarians from my pilot studies. And so, yes, it's been on my mind for a long time, and you know, I've really been trying to think about what could I best do to empower the movement. And I really very strongly believe that if we can understand meat eating not simply as a matter of individual choice or personal ethics, but as the inevitable end result of a belief system, then we can dramatically change the way we think and talk about the issue. And my hope is that by spreading the word about carnism and raising people's awareness about how the system operates, we really will be able to change the way that we dialogue about it and raise consciousness among carnists and vegans to better support animals and the planet.
So as you've said, this is a great book for both vegans and carnists to read.
Mm-hmm.
Vegans, so that we can educate others and learn more about what you're talking about here. I know, I'm sure it's something that, you know, like people like Joanne and I think about a lot, but we haven't spent the time as you've done to do the interviews, do the research and that. So we can read this book, pass on the information, and as you said, also give this book to those who are carnists.
Have you heard from carnists who in your life who have read this book, and what are their reactions?
Mm-hmm. I have, and that's a great question. I've found that carnists have been had a very positive reaction to the book. When I was writing the book, I was very careful to make sure that it was a book that did not pathologize or blame carnists. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most people, I know for myself, I was not born vegan or vegetarian. I was a carnist for much of my life, and I wasn't a bad person, I wasn't a monster, but I ate animals, and on some level, I knew that somebody had to die for my plate. And I did it anyway. And I really believe that most people who eat animals, you know, we have this knowing without knowing. On one level, we're aware of an unpleasant truth. Mm-hmm. And on another level, we're just not ready to take in the reality of that. And so because of that, I think that this speaks to a core experience of carnists that they can relate to. And to some degree, I think people find it a relief to name something that's everywhere. We all know it's everywhere. It's around us. It's inside of us. And when you can name it, you feel that you have more freedom of choice.
Mm-hmm. I love the title of your book. I mean, it says it all. And I hope that carnists find it as an accessible title that they would, you know, I think the people that will read this book that identify themselves as its carnists are those that will see the book cover and go, wow, that intrigues me. I want to learn more.
Well, that was the hope. And people usually do. I see, you know, people will look at the cover and laugh, and it immediately strikes a chord in them because they think, wow, that's true. And I haven't thought of that before.
And there are open-minded carnists out there.
There really are. And I think it's important, you know, when we're communicating with carnists, again, to speak to the person and not the defenses, and, you know, to recognize that the vast majority of people do not want animals to suffer, let alone know that they're participating in that suffering. And my hope is that this book will open the door for them. It's, you know, rather than saying this is what's wrong with the world and, you know, how you're part of the problem, to say this is the world that you've been born into, and here's a way to be part of the solution. Because for better or worse, we're all participants in the system of carnism. It's just a question of, you know, not whether we participate, but how we participate. And I think that most people, when given the opportunity, you know, will make choices that are in the best interest of themselves and other animals and the planet. And without awareness, there is no free choice. So my hope is that by raising carnists' awareness, they can choose more compassionately and more authentically and freely.
I love this message of not just showing more compassion for animals, but showing compassion for the carnists. Thank you so much, Melanie Joy, for joining us today.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Have a happy holiday.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Again, listeners of today's show will have a chance to win a copy of Melanie's book, Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows, if you answer this question correctly. If we call an herbivore vegetarian, what do we call an omnivore? Send your answer to radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Before we go, Allison would like to tell us what's coming up next week.
Next week, our featured guest will be animal activist Peter Young, who will be speaking on a couple of issues, including the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, which is present in the United States, and the legal trial of B.J. Veal, who is currently awaiting sentencing for the release of 600 mink from a fur farm in Iowa. So please tune in next week for that interview. You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM on Co-op Radio. And thanks for a set of great interviews there today, Joanne.
Thank you.
That was wonderful. Talk to you next week. Bye.